So we can start the second session. So welcome again for the second session. And now we have four speakers from the area of Oceania, I think. And they are going to talk about how to set up, let's say, an integration between Phosphor G and State of the Map. And I'll hand over. Who is the first speaker?
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so my name's Eduardo. I'm going to talk about Oceania. I'm going to introduce these fine-looking gentlemen in a moment. But first, Oceania. So for those that don't know, it's not a mythical land. It's not a mythical drug, as far as I'm aware. It's not a city under the sea. It's actually, I guess, a hodgepodge of countries in the South Pacific that don't fit anywhere else. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. This is a map that was apparently the first atlas of the world, and you can see that, at least as far as Europeans were concerned, Oceania didn't exist until very recently. But we're not going to be talking about the first map of the world. We're going to be talking about a conference that we put together and an entity that we've created and kind of the beginnings of this, and maybe talk with you guys at the end as well about what it takes to form an entity, some of the concerns around forming an entity, and what we're looking to do next. So I'll introduce the first speaker. Actually, I'll introduce them all. So this is Alex. He's one of the few Tasmanians with one head as opposed to two. He's also the treasurer of OzGeo. We have Adam, Iceman Adam. He loves ice of the Antarctic variety. He's a jack of all trades. He'll be talking after Alex. And then finishing is the president of OzGeo Oceania, the koala slash grizzly bear that is John. Half Canadian, half Australian, kind of he sees what he feels like on each day. But I'll introduce Alex first.
Thanks, Ed. So I want to give you a little bit of a background onto the beginnings of our organisation, of our conference. So at the end of November, in late 2017, there was a group of people in Queensland who organised a QGIS meetup, and they thought they'd get a few folks together and have a little bit of a chat, and it ended up having 80 people there, including people coming from as far as Hong Kong and as far afield as Tasmania, all the way to Queensland. And they had a really good forum, a really great discussion. Were you there, Jody? Yeah. Anyway, so we had this is the next generation. Phosphor G, the next generation. So anyway, there were 80 people in Brisbane, and it sort of proved that there is a bit of a need or a latent, a bit of demand for this kind of thing. So at the end of 2017, over beers, over sort of a few different channels of discussion and forums, there was a group of people that decided to form the kernel of a conference. And we put the word out there, and it gathered together a group of people. And so we ended up having 12 or sort of went up and down people who agreed that we all wanted to run this conference. We went and sought out the relationships with OSGEO and the OpenStreetMap Foundations and made sure we could get permission to use the branding and the name. We thought pretty hard and had some good discussions around the scope. Do we just keep it modest and aim for Australia? Do we sort of say Australia, New Zealand? Do we go for Southeast Asia or the Pacific? But we start including big inconvenient places like the USA if we do that. We ended up picking Oceania, which you can see in the picture here. This is from Wikipedia. So it includes, I guess, the sort of the behemoth in the room. So Australia, which is a sort of the large entity, and New Zealand, which is reasonably large, but a whole bunch of South Pacific Island countries. And so Oceania was the region that we picked, and it's like early on, it was a bit of a feeling like we're not sure that we can actually justify doing this. So we're aspiring to be inclusive of the whole of Oceania. And like I said, like we don't want it just to be Australia pretending like we're including others. And so there's a few initiatives that we'll talk about later which sort of made sure that we could include the whole region. And since it was our first conference, we needed to try and keep it simple but manageable and the right amount of formality. And so we sought a partnership with the Surveying and Spatial Sciences Institute in Australia in order to handle finances and potentially sign contracts with venues and this kind of thing, so that we weren't personally taking on risk. And so that was a really valuable thing for us, having the support of SSSI to take the risk. And in exchange, what we did was we shared some of the surplus that came off at the end. So that's the beginning. And then in the middle, we ran a conference. So as I said, we aimed for, in a fair bit of ways to do it modestly, a target of about 80 to 120 people. We were lucky enough to have a partnership with the University of Melbourne, which meant that we had a free venue for the conference. And we ended up just getting support from all over the place, more than we could have imagined in so many different areas. So sponsorship targets were doubled. We ended up closing registrations. We sold out at 250 people. We ran a full day of workshops with 14 different workshops. We ran 2 days of conference, including four keynotes, a couple of those international. We had 45 presentations, and we ran a community day with about half a dozen different events supporting OpenStreetMap and open source software projects, and really getting some great participation. So the way we managed it was that we elected a chair, we ran fortnightly meetings, we kept the sort of rhythm going there, and we allocated a lead in a various different a group of areas. So whether that's sponsorship, marketing, the program, community day. And in this way, we worked really well together, but had someone responsible for each of these areas and pushed through. And the other thing that we'll talk about a bit later as well is engaging with the community. So quite often we would reach out and put a survey out or something on Twitter or ask through a mailing list and request input into structure or content or whatever it might be. And that worked really well in that we not only sort of sought for feedback and got people to have a bit of ownership in the event itself, we also ended up having that as being part of promoting the event. So it, it was sort of winning in two different ways. In terms of feedback, we got some really good feedback. But all the positive stuff's great, it's positive, but there's a few things where we have opportunities to improve. So we got a bit of mixed feedback on the panel session that we need to do something different there. And in terms of program structure, I think this event's doing it quite well in that we have 20 minutes to speak, 5 minutes for questions, and then 5 minutes for changeover. And keeping the start times really strict is really key. So we had a bit of mess in between rooms and stuff. We got some good feedback, things like donuts, so make sure you do donuts. Yeah. we got some sort of criticism. It's really good. What can we improve? And I think that's really important. Don't have Macs and Microsoft computers up on the stage, apparently, is an important thing. But more seriously, there's some great comments there. And look, overall feedback, someone's enthusiastic enough to write in all caps and say it was the best user group conference I've been to, and I've attended approximately 30 of them. So that's a pretty good supporting statement. And just to wrap up my section here, we've got a whole bunch of people saying yes, they're coming to Wellington. And so we have a conference coming up in November in Wellington, so we'd love to see you all there. Around half of that committee are new, and the other half are continuing, so we've got that continuity, that shared sort of learning, this standing on the shoulders of the previous. And already we've got great sponsorship from people like Orbica. Thank you, Kurt. And we've sold out our early bird tickets in a week, so that's really great support. So hope to see you there, and I'll pass over to Ed.
Thanks, Alex. All right, so one thing that comes, like, that we had to get through to create an entity and also to run a conference was to work out whether it was a good idea to merge two communities. So we had the OpenStreetMap community that is generally involved with State of the Map as far as conferences are concerned, and then we had the Phosphor Geo community, I guess the OSGeo community more broadly. So I want to talk about some of the differences of those two communities and then some of the commonalities that made it kind of a good idea to merge them. So differences, OpenStreetMap, particularly in Australia, I think it's a bit different in Australia, in Oceania, is that it's a lot of hobbyists. So if you go to a place like the US, a lot of people in the OpenStreetMap community are actually part of corporations that have something to do with OpenStreetMap. That's not necessarily the case in Oceania. In fact, it very rarely is. It's obviously built around a single project, so the OpenStreetMap community has a focus on one project, one open source project. And a lot of them are self-funded because they're hobbyists, because they're part of the community. They're often funding themselves to go to the conferences. Whereas if you look at the open geo community in Oceania, a lot of them are geospatial professionals. A lot of them know each other already, and they're technically minded, and they're also often employer funded. So the team at Orbica, for example, if they're going to a conference, hopefully Orbica can fund them. Some differences there, and kind of we had to keep that in mind when we're organizing the conference and when we're organizing Wellington this year as well. So why would it make sense to join these two communities together? I think one, they're both familiar with the open source ethos and the volunteer ethos. They're comfortable with those concepts of volunteering. They're interested in solving geospatial problems, whether it's with OpenStreetMap or whether it's with QGIS or whether it's with GRASS. They're trying to solve a problem that has a geospatial component. And that's common whether they're technically minded or not. And so this degree of overlap means it makes sense to combine forces and put a conference together that incorporates both communities, even if it means we have a long name like Phosphor G, State of the Map, Oceania 2019. So we put these two communities together. We did the conference that Alex just talked about, and then we realized we needed to create an entity to make this more sustainable. So I won't get into the details of that entity, but here's our nice certificate from the Australian Securities and Investment Commission. And so we have the entity, and we'd love to talk to you about kind of the governance structures and the kind of what's next as far as an entity is concerned. But just to do a quick cross-section, a quick health check of this entity that we've created. I won't go through all of these, but I'll take one from each. So strengths, I guess the most interesting one here, you could say that we built a strong foundation through consensus. So last year when we had these meetings to organize the conference, a lot of the time we would try to reach consensus before moving forward. And that was often a slow process. To get everyone in a room to agree is difficult. Via email, it's even more difficult. But this meant that when we moved forward with a decision, a lot of the community had felt like they owned the decision. And that, in the long term, is more sustainable. Weaknesses, I guess the interesting one here would be that none of us had experience in running a formal entity. We're making this up, like I'm sure a lot of us are when we do these things. I think that might show every now and then, but I think we have a good diversity of experience. And so these guys, for example, have a lot more experience in running entities than me, and I've learned a lot from them, but I think that diversity of experience is good. Opportunities. I guess the interesting one here would be, I think the travel grant program. So one unique thing about Oceania is that we have so many different islands and it's quite a large region. And so it can become quite expensive to send people from, say, Fiji all the way to Perth if we were to have a conference in Perth one day. So having funds available to people with less economic means to travel across the Pacific would be great. We've done the travel grant program already, but there's more opportunity to get funding and to increase that. Maybe we'll have 30, 40 participants going forward. And then threats. So I reckon there's going to be a recession coming. That's my prediction. You heard it here first. That's a threat to us. But just like more seriously, you know, if the macroeconomic conditions change, are we ready to deal with that? Financial misappropriation. If John takes the funds and goes to his cabin in the Yukon, are we prepared to deal with that? Do we have a structure in place to make it so that he can't do that?
Travel grants is not fun.
Yep. So I'll pass it to Adam now.
Okay, hi, I'm Adam, and my section here is to talk about community responsibility. So we're building this thing for all of Oceania, and we really took on board the idea that we came across in Dar es Salaam for the international conference of leaving no one behind. So with this giant, really diverse, culturally and financially region that we look after, how do we do that? So we basically... we're the first regional Phosphor G conference to be funded for a travel grant program by the global organization, and we really appreciated that. It helped us bring 8 people from all across the region that would not have been able to make it otherwise, and we intend to continue that. So a couple of really new things we did. We started a thing called the Good Mojo Program, which is again based on people volunteering extra money where they can. And we basically have quarantined money for initiatives like travel grant programs or sponsoring networking breakfasts for women in geospatial or travel grant people, down to funding catering for people that needed to bring children to the conference. And one of the cool things we did there with our sponsors is we had really limited space for a table, so we said, well, if you don't want a table, we'll donate money into that as an organization. We included families in the conference. We looked at childcare. We talked to a bunch of people, and we were like, well, just bring your kids because they're the future. They're just, you know, we don't have traditional families anymore, and very few people get to, you know, park their kids with someone else. So we'll just bring them, and we'll all work together on that. But the key thing is we had a curated process of everything, and I think Ed and Alex have talked about this a little bit. Decisions took a long time, but it meant we had ownership of everything. So when we did a call for papers, we invited specific people that we hadn't heard from, and we invited specific communities that we hadn't heard from. And we looked around and said, who's making the least noise? Let's tap them on the shoulder. And that started to work reasonably well. And but we're always still learning. One of our other issues is environmental responsibility, because we're a big issue. We can't a big region, and we can't avoid air travel. So that's something we're working on now and into the future. But all of that work, all of that hard work to try and bring people on board that we haven't heard from and include people, resulted in this is one of our panelists in the conference. This is their reflection on the event. So. That was great, and that's reflected in general in this community, because I go to science conferences and people say, are you funded? I go to industry conferences and people say, what can I sell you? And I come here and people are, how can we help? So we really want to start that culture early and engage with it and keep it rolling. Finally, following the general OSGO model, open by default. So there's our conference budget. You can go and read it. So anyone who wants to run a future conference can see what we did. And a lot of decision making about what should be open and not open, and what should we make available. And in general, we're trying to coordinate multiple media channels and make sure that everyone who wants to have a say can have a say, and specifically reaching out to people that we think we should hear from, whether they've spoken up or not. And I think that's it, and I can hand over to John. Thank you.
3 minutes. Okay, so 3 minutes. I have a bunch of top tips. I don't think I'm going to go through them in any detail here because I don't think we have time, but that's okay. Because what I'd like to do instead is I'll come to the code sprint tomorrow, and if anybody is thinking about organizing an event, I'd love to sit down with you and walk through some of our experiences, and I can show you in detail, you know, some of the tools we use, some of the things we learned. And I think for us, we had some words of encouragement very early on that I think were very powerful and motivating for us, and I hope we can kind of pay that forward and help other people do the same thing. So, again, top tips. I won't go through them, but hopefully if you have a chance to come to the Code Sprint tomorrow, we can go through some of those. So rather than go through those, I will just finish off with what's next. So as mentioned, we have an entity, Austria Oceania. It's a public company, and we've spent the last year pulling this together, and I think what it does is we've been working on building a foundation for moving forward on several initiatives. So we're going to continue to develop the annual conference. That'll be a key focus. After foundation building, I think what we'll need to focus on quite heavily is sustainability of, and by sustainability, what I mean is not just the entity and the company, but also the community. And also, I think, considering what sustainability means in open source and how we as a community contribute to that. So projects overseas, what can we in Oceania be doing to help those projects out? We're going to kick off some new initiatives, hopefully. We've had some ideas, nothing set in stone yet, but we'll have some more small events, I hope. We'll work through putting together some scholarships and grants for people to travel to and from events in our region and beyond. We want to work on strengthening connections locally within Oceania between the far-flung communities, but also globally between Oceania and overseas, and support local initiatives in different parts of Oceania. And I think one of the key things we're going to need to work on this year is find out what does the community actually want to do. So we're going to be doing a lot of outreach and listening and working with people around the region to do that. And to finish off, you can communicate, you can reach us anytime. We've got an email address, we've got websites, we've got wiki pages. You can find us, drop us a line. We'd love to talk to you. Okay. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. I was really impressed with this presentation. I guess there are some questions here. I'll hand you the microphone and you give it back.
Very well. Thank you. We have a very nice talk and informative. I have two questions. The first one is, if I understood correctly, you went for the for-profit organization, like no, okay. That you can explain later. The second question would be if whether there were any issues to convince the sponsors to go public with their budget they are sponsoring. Thank you.
So yeah, it's a not-for-profit. It's a public company. It's a special kind of company that exists in Australia. I'm sure overseas have similar things. But yeah, it's clearly a not-for-profit. And so that answers the first question. But the second part, are sponsors comfortable with that? Well, so I mean, in the budget that we've published, it's a slightly redacted version. It doesn't have any private information. So that we're fairly careful with that. The sponsorship prospectus is public, so I mean, and everybody knows who the sponsors are, so it's not hard to figure out how much sponsorship has actually been involved. But yeah, no, we're very careful to sort of keep anything private or, yeah.
I see more question.
Do you need more on the committee?
Always. Great. I mean, the only thing is that we're an active committee. We're volunteers, but we're kind of someone called it a duocracy. I don't know if that's kind of lame, but it feels right, like the right word, because if something needed to be done, we didn't just talk about it as a committee and say, yes, we'd better do that. Maybe we'll write a strategy for how we do that. We just went and did it. And a lot of the work that we did, someone else would come along afterwards and add a whole bunch of quality to it. And so we ended up having 3 or 4 people iterating on these things, and in that way, we made each other stronger. So definitely need more people, and means we get more continuity in. Yeah.
Have you got any from the islands, Fiji, Rarotonga, anyone represent? Repeat?
Are there any members on our committee from the islands? So we have one individual from the islands, right?
Not this year. We did, but she's not on the committee this year. But. At the moment, no. But we will have a lot of people at the conference this year from the Pacific Islands, and we'll definitely be hitting them up pretty hard to join us.
Yeah. I have an idea.
So okay. Let's talk. Okay. Yeah.
We still have 2 minutes for any more questions. Yes.
Could you speak more to the decision-making process? You talked about consensus building. Could you just expand on that? Thank you.
So we call it a consensus building model, but we're not following any particular model. I think we're going very instinctively based on an ethos of making sure that everybody in the group has an opportunity to make their views known. Taking time to bring out those views, and also not assuming that a face-to-face meeting or a video meeting is necessarily the best venue for all those views to come out. So I think a process of eliciting views, testing ideas, discussing them at length, as mentioned, and sort of investing in that, just investing in that process to make sure that we're that everybody does have the opportunity to fully express their opinion and come to some sort of a shared, I guess, vision. Even if not everybody agrees all the time, which we found, at least we've all kind of had a good chance to talk about the pros and cons of whatever idea and in the end come to something we can all live with. Yeah.
There's time for one last question. And or make a comment?
So just touching on decision-making, a couple of things that we were able to generate in the committee were this idea of if you find a problem, you have to also bring a solution. So it's not easy, but if someone comes up and says, oh, that's a terrible idea, it's expected, and this is part of the culture now, that you have an alternative to propose. And that's a really powerful mechanism for trying to get things done that we found. So that's... Yeah.
Sounds obvious, right? But
okay, thanks again. A round of applause for these gentlemen. Very impressive how you set something up in this vast and dispersed area, I must say. Thank you.